We moved our cows around upstairs because we have cow pictures.
Yeah, the tale as old as time, the love story that is never to be.
Yeah. Phyllis got sick of their shit, so we moved her into our bedroom, and we got Steve. So Steve and Jeff are now staring each other down, trying to win Phyllis over to get her back.
Phyllis is just in your room watching you two bang.
Yeah. She's freak.
Phyllis is a freak. No, okay, well, we gotta fucking start so I can tell you this.
Yes. This is, I'm sorry, what the podcast this
wait, hold on, stop.
Oh, no, okay.
I 136, 137, 138. Okay.
Okay, go.
Yo. What am I rapping? I'm holding the microphone and now I'm...
It's just because we said RIP that pussy yes. A right before you started.
Now I'm fucking... DJ. Episode one. Thank you. Episode 138 of I'm Sorry What the Podcast. I'm Christina. That lovely little gremlin trash panda over there is Amanda.
I'm totally going to lean into Trash Panda.
It's nice. Thing. Just accept it. It's cool. I'm very impressed that you still have your wedding nails on.
Yeah, and they're not broken at all, and they're like secure.
I fucking pop mine off like 4 days after your wedding.
No, dude, they like won't go anywhere.
She did a good job.
Yeah, she got them. They're growing out though, so I either have to get them filled or go get them off here at some point.
Got them.
But check it out. See, leaning into my trash panda ways.
Dead inside. Nice. I'm all crunched up in Trevor here, but I have a Sanderson Witch Museum, Home of the Black Flame Candle t-shirt on.
Okay. So we need to figure out doing like a road trip from your house to some of these fun places, P.S. like mm-hmm. on the East Coast and stuff.
I know. I want to go to Salem really bad.
And I'm not even opposed to like going on an off season, not spooky season, because all year round spooky for me. Mm-hmm. So we should maybe try to figure that out for like next summer or something.
But I feel like fall in Massachusetts is like beautiful.
Oh, I'm sure it's beautiful, but it's also fucking busy. And I hate people and I don't feel like going to jail.
You're right. I do hate people.
I don't want to go to jail.
But I will. That was our motto when we would go out. Mm-hmm. Just so you guys know.
Who was I talking to that I just announced that to?
That was our, I don't want to go to jail, but I will. That's right, our attitude.
I'm not opposed to it if I have to.
Step to me. I got a new chair, everybody. Coffee.
Sorry.
I got a new chair.
That's your news. My news.
That's my news. I got a new chair. His name's Trevor. And it's the biggest chair I've ever sat in my entire life.
That's cool, man.
It's so comfy, man. Listen, this is an important event in my life, man. I love it. It's so comfy. Be jealous.
I am jealous. I'm sitting in my fart chair. Now it won't do it because I'm trying to make it do it.
Sitting in a farty chair. Farty.
What's up?
This is the third week of October.
Oh, yeah. Which would be what Wednesday?
What? I believe it's the Wednesday I have my surgery.
And? The
19th.
Hallelujah. Yes, the 19th.
When you guys are listening to this, I'm probably unconscious in an operating room having a doctor poke at my face.
It's true. Just
keep that in mind this whole episode.
This will be my first week back from doing overnights, and I am going to be so relieved.
Man, it's going to be tie-tie.
Mm-hmm. But I did switch my day of my last day for my normal day job to the first week. So I have that second week and I'll just have the days open so that I don't have to like overwork myself and then be sick for 2 weeks after my overnights.
Nice.
So that'll be nice.
Twill be nice.
So
then my brother keeps sending me gifts on Messenger. He sends me like 19 a day. And then he'll go like, am I bothering you? And I'm like, nope, they're all funny. I'll just give you one LOL at the end of the day.
Right. Nope, they're good. I just don't have time for that.
I'm just not going to respond to every single GIF you send me because there are quite a few. So you just get an LOL at the end of the day.
That's like you and me with our TikToks. We'll send each other, and then one will have a response to, and it's like, yeah, I watch all of them and they're funny, but I also don't respond to every single one because
it's a lot.
Funny. It's a lot. All right.
All right. Should we
jabbering, Miss Migraine?
Should we start this shit?
Yeah. You tell me a spooky story.
Well, you see, when we texted last night, I had a whole other story planned.
Uh huh.
But I was bored with it.
Oh.
It wasn't that interesting as I thought it was going to be. I was going to do the Hoyo Baciu, whatever it is, florist in Romania.
Yeah.
And it's like creepy, but it's not like tell it on a podcast creepy. Like,
there just wasn't enough to it to make it like,
right? No, like I was expecting, because there's a Ghost Adventures that goes there, fucking mm-hmm. Bagginsies goes there, and I was like, there's probably a lot more creepy stuff, blah blah blah. No, like everything they talk about, that's the only thing that you can find in articles. I'm like, cool, so I'm just retelling a Ghost Adventures episode.
Great.
So then I did. Have you ever heard of Flight 19?
Yes and no. Like, I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
So it's basically the start of what is like the Bermuda Triangle lore. It's what kind of put the Bermuda Triangle on the map.
Okay.
Kind of.
Intriguing.
So it was Flight 19 was the designation of a group of five U.S. torpedo bombers that disappeared over the Bermuda Triangle in 1945.
Okay.
After losing contact during a United States Navy, like, overwater navigation. So they were basically running bombing trainings.
Okay.
And they were dropping, like, fake bombs or like practice bombs over a group of islands out in the Bahamas that are uninhabited. So they were just running like training missions all day. So there were 18 before it because they were Flight 19. So there were 18 that had run it the whole day and everything was going smoothly. And then Flight 19 ran. So at 2 p.m. on December 5th, 1945, five TBM Avenger torpedo bombers took off from a naval air station in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. They were scheduled to basically do a 3-hour exercise known as Navigation Problem 1. And it was basically a triangular flight plan, and it called for them to head east from Florida, the Florida coast, and conduct bombing runs on a group of island called Hens and Chicken Shoals.
Okay.
Which is like a group of abandoned islands, basically. Then they would turn north and proceed over the Grand Bahama Island before proceeding, before like changing course a third time and coming back to Fort Lauderdale. And so it was like, it's basically when you look at their flight plan, it was like a triangle that they were supposed to fly, or like a obtuse kind of triangle.
Right.
Sort of thing. So, sorry, I know a lot about this, so I lost my
brain turned off.
My brain turned off. So then they would fly southwest back to Fort Lauderdale. All of the planes, except for one plane, there's one plane that carried two people. Otherwise, there were three men in each of the bombers. Most of whom had logged around about 300 hours in the air, so they were a little bit newer, but
relatively experienced.
Right. And they were led by flight leader Lieutenant Charles C. Taylor, who was an experienced pilot and a veteran of several combat missions in World War II.
Okay.
So radio conversations between the pilots were overheard by base and other aircraft in the area. The practice bombing operation is known to have been carried out
like without a hitch, basically. So they made it to the Hens and Chicken Shoals because they the last, like one of the last communications, at about 3 o'clock, a pilot requested and was given permission to drop the last bomb. So 40 minutes later, another flight instructor, Lieutenant Robert C. Fox, was forming up with his own group of students for the same mission, and he received an unidentified transmission. So they didn't know who was reaching out to them.
Okay.
And it was an unidentified crew member who asked one of the students, they like registered one of the students, like they got in there. I don't know. Headset, and it said, "I don't know where we are. We must have gotten lost after that last turn." Like that's the transmission they picked up. So then Robert Cox transmitted, this is FT-74, which is his plane name. And then he said, "Please identify yourself so someone can help you." The response after a few moments was a request from the others in the flight for suggestions. So Taylor said, this is FT-28. Both of my compasses are out, and I'm trying to find Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'm over land, but it's broken. I'm sure I'm in the Keys, but I don't know how far down I am, and I don't know how to get to Fort Lauderdale.
That's unfortunate. Okay.
So based on that transmission, his compasses, and each of those planes had two compasses in them.
Right.
And all of their compasses went out.
Right. All their compasses went cattywampus.
So, and Taylor's claim didn't really make sense because if he made his scheduled pass over Hens and Chicken Shoals, which they know they did because they requested a drop bombs, they wouldn't, they couldn't be at the Keys less than an hour earlier, later.
Right.
So they, it basically him saying that, "I believe I'm over the Keys," means that his planes had somehow drifted over 100 miles off course.
Yeah.
So they're not, I mean, they could have made that in an hour, but they still weren't sure like how they got so far off course.
Right.
Now Taylor had just transferred to Fort Lauderdale from Miami. So he may have confused some of the islands of the Bahamas for the Florida Keys.
Okay.
So under normal circumstances, pilots lost in the Atlantic were supposed to point their planes towards the setting sun and fly west toward the mainland. But Taylor had become kind of convinced that he was near like Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And so hoping to locate the Florida Peninsula, he steered Flight 19 northeast, which would have sent them further out to sea if they were in the Bahamas.
Actually, right.
Right. So another transmission came through of one of the other pilots that says, "Damn it, if we would just fly west, we would get home." But because there was only, like, Taylor was the leader, so they all had to kind of, like, follow him.
Right.
Then the troubles only mounted because a storm front blew in. And it brought very heavy rain, gusting winds, and heavy cloud cover. So then they lost the sun.
Okay.
So then at that point, Flight 19, they believe, was just hopelessly disoriented.
They had no idea where they were. It's like when you get too deep into water and you can't tell which way is up when you get disoriented.
Right. Well, and that, and there is also a thing that pilots can get disoriented and they can't tell what's the sky and what's ground.
Yeah.
So Taylor was eventually, they know in one transmission that they turned west and started heading west about shortly after 6 p.m. But then after about 20 minutes, he canceled that and changed direction. He said, "We didn't go far enough east. I'm still worried that we're over the Gulf. We may as well just turn around and go east again." So they believe at this point that he went east.
Okay. Burning a lot of fuel.
Right. So Flight 19's radio transmission like became increasingly faint as it got further and further out to sea. When fuel began to run low, Taylor was heard prepping his men for a potential crash landing in the ocean. He said, "All planes close up tight. We'll have to ditch unless landfall. When the first plane drops below 10 gallons, we all go down together." A few minutes later, the last radio commissions were basically just replaced with an eerie buzz. So it was just static. So the Navy immediately scrambled search planes to hunt for the missing patrol around 7:30 p.m. A group of PBM Mariner flying boats. So these are like huge planes, but they also can like land in water. Took off from an air station north of Fort Lauderdale. Just 20 minutes later, however, one of them seemed to follow Flight 19 and also vanished off radar. So the remains of the Mariner and its 13 crewmen were also never recovered. But it's believed that the seaplane may have had some type of engine trouble and exploded shortly after takeoff.
Okay.
So flying boats were actually notoriously accident prone and were even nicknamed flying gas tanks. So they had a propensity of catching fire.
They just tend to implode.
Yes. So a passing merchant ship said that they spotted a fireball and found evidence of an oil slick in the ocean. So they believe that that plane just blew up.
Okay. Which, so, according to that, makes sense, I guess, the evidence.
Right. So at first light the next day, the Navy dispatched more than 300 boats and aircraft to look for Flight 19 and the missing Mariner. The search party spent five days combing through more than 300,000 square miles of territory, and they did not locate anything. They just vanished, basically. We had hundreds of planes out looking. So Navy Lieutenant David White stated that we had hundreds of planes out looking, and we searched over land and water all day. Nobody ever found the bodies or any debris. So then a Navy board investigation went over the accident, basically. And it argued that Taylor might have confused the Bahamas for the Florida Keys after his compasses malfunctioned, but it could find no clear explanation for why Flight 19 had become so disoriented. So they basically attributed it to causes or reasons unknown.
Okay.
And it was also because there were five planes and all of them, their compasses malfunctioned.
Right. It wasn't just like a happenstance for one.
Right.
That happened
and
to.
Each plane had two compasses in it.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that's weird.
So a 500-page Navy board investigation report published a few months later made several observations, basically. So flight leader Lieutenant Charles C. Taylor had mistakenly believed that the small islands he passed over were the Florida Keys, that his flight was over the Gulf of Mexico and was heading northeast would take them to Florida. It was determined that Taylor had passed over the Bahamas as scheduled, and he did, in fact, lead his flight to the northeast over the Atlantic. The report noted that some subordinate officers did likely know their approximate position as indicated like by some of the radio transmissions where they said that we needed to go west.
Okay.
But Taylor was not at fault because the compasses stopped working. And then the loss of the Mariner was attributed to an explosion. So they basically amended the report to cause unknown because Taylor's mother contended that the Navy was unfairly blaming her son for the loss of five aircraft and 14 men, when the Navy had neither the bodies nor the airplanes as evidence.
Right. They're like, clearly something is weird.
So basically, now I have just like kind of what they think happened.
Okay.
So had Flight 19 actually been where Taylor believed it to be, the flight would have made landfall with the Florida coastline within 20 minutes, depending on how far down the Gulf Coast they were. Okay. However, a later reconstruction of the incident showed that the islands visible to Taylor were probably the Bahamas, well northeast of the Keys, and that Flight 19 was exactly where it should have been. The Board of Investigation found that because of this belief, he was on a base course toward Florida. Taylor actually guided the flight further out to sea.
Right.
So, also combined with bad weather and the ditching characteristics of the Avenger, which was known to, like, if you ditched it in the water, it sank within, like, 3 minutes. Like, it was very...
Oh, it wasn't a buoyant thing at all.
Right. So meant that there was like little hope of rescue, even if they had managed to just like stay afloat or get out of the plane. It is possible that Taylor overshot Gorda Cay, where they were supposed to, like, turn.
Okay.
And reached another landmass in the southern, like, Abaco Islands. He then proceeded northwest as planned and expected to find the Grand Bahama Island, but he saw landmass to his right side, and which was the Abaco Islands, and thought he was in the Gulf. So, like, it's possible that he overshot his turn and landed over other...
Which makes a little more sense than being as far off course as he and they thought maybe he was. Right. You know what I mean?
And okay. So that would have set a course to what... So he was like, okay, here's where we're at. We need to go southwest to get to Fort Lauderdale, which is what they should have turned. But that would have changed his course to open ocean as well, because right. they overshot where they were supposed to turn.
Right. If he had misconstrued his turning spot.
Right. So basically, after trying for a while with no land in sight, Taylor decided it was impossible for them to fly so far west and not reach Florida. He believed that he had been near the Key West Islands, and then basically the course that he set brought them further out into the ocean, and they ran out of fuel and crashed and died.
Right.
So the strange events of December 5th, 1945 has since become basically, they have wild theories and speculation. And in the 60s and 70s, there was a pulp magazine that helped popularize the idea that Flight 19 had been gobbled up by the Bermuda Triangle.
Gobbled. I like the wording.
Gobbled up. So that's kind of where, and then as they started to, like, kind of fictionalize and theorize and all this stuff, they found other planes that, and ships and things like that, and kind of brought together the mythos of.
So that's like where the lore
began.
They're like, ooh, let's look at this. This is a weird space.
Yes.
Okay. That's definitely have heard of it, but, like, didn't know how weird it was. You know what I mean? But, I mean, I guess it makes sense that last theory you talked about where, like, maybe he thought he was somewhere and then they directed him as if he was there.
Right.
And then he turned in it, instead of reaching where he was supposed to, it went into open ocean.
Yeah.
So it makes sense, but it sucks no matter what it is.
It's weird because, like, all of the plane's compasses malfunctioned.
Right. And then they got super disoriented, didn't know which way they were going either.
What caused all of those planes to malfunction, especially when there had been 18 flights the day before or that morning?
I wonder if there's some sort of, like, magnetic
during that specific time
in that area, and it's like you know, I don't know. I know nothing. I'm not a biologist, a geologist. Weird. That's what it would be.
It's a weird little area. Yeah.
I don't ever plan to go there.
Yeah, sounds terrible.
You know, just because, you know, what if? I'd rather not.
It just sounds like a good place to avoid. Dude, I gotta poop all of a sudden. I'm sorry.
It's okay. My coffee's hitting me too, so.
Okay.
See you a little bit.
Pause. All right. Are we
ready
to tell me a weird story?
I am, but I am going to give you another pick your own adventure.
Pick your own adventure. My favorite.
You can choose Inuit or Indonesian.
Let's do Inuit.
Inuit. All right. So I have looked into a couple cryptids that I had never heard of.
Ooh.
So they're creepy. Might be a strong word, but they're fucking weird.
Okay. I'm all for it.
This is a legend of Indian, and by Indian, I mean Inuit lore.
I say there. Hey, look it.
Thank you. You know who can't see that? The people listening. Hey, look it. Look at what?
What am I looking at?
So I'm going to tell you the legend of the Iraq. And the plural is irate. So I will say Iraq, irate throughout, and it's the same thing.
Iraq?
It's like irate. A-J-I-R-A-Q is Iraq, and the J is silent. I've looked it up multiple times.
No, I'm not questioning it. It's just a weird name.
And then irate is A-I-J-I-R-A-I-T. So this is a shapeshifter in Inuit lore.
Mm.
Usually taking form of a part caribou, part human. Their eyes and mouth are vertical. So the slits of their eyes go up and down. Creepy as hell. If you look it up, kind of looks like a vagina face. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But it's weird. And their mouth sits vertical too. So it's just a lot of weird, like, you know, hold on. Not that anybody else could see.
Yeah, I don't like that. Stop it. What? No. No, ma'am.
Their eyes are red no matter what form they take. And that's how you can tell that it is an Iraq. Okay. There are basically, so what they are interdimensional beings in lore. They live, quote unquote, between two worlds, between the world of the dead and the world of the living.
So they're part caribou, part human.
Mm-hmm.
Which part is caribou and which part is human?
They have caribou elongated face and have antlers. From what I've seen.
But they're like a human body?
Similar. So they're like upright walking caribou is kind of what it looks like.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Okay, one second.
But again, it's just all, I mean, it's all in how you.
One second. Sorry.
It's all in how you imagine it. So, I mean, from the illustrations that I've seen, that's how they imagine it.
And it's
a shapeshifter. So.
I hate anything that is like humanoid.
I know, me too.
It creeps me out. I don't like it.
The Inuit believe that the Irate were people at one point that hunted too far north. Like, so it's one of those, you know, warnings of going too far north.
Cautionary tale.
Mm-hmm. And somehow got stuck in between the world of the living and the dead.
Ooh.
Another possible origin was, okay, so this is a long one. There once was a woman who didn't want to have a husband. She didn't want to get married. Her father hated this, got pissed.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said that, fine, then you are marrying your pet dog, basically. Then you get to just have your dog. You don't get to have anything else. And he sent her alone with her dog to her own island.
Listen, so far... sounds wonderful.
So the dog and her are on this island, and the dog meets up with her father every once in a while to get more food rations. Okay. At some point, she gives birth to 9 puppies. So there's more than just friendship happening in this dog
relationship. Yeah. Hey.
Bestiality.
Hey. You went too far.
With 9 more mouths to feed, the dog needed more food, obviously, but they didn't want to say to the father that they had puppies because that was not part of the living situation that he was planning.
I didn't want to tell my dad I had 9 puppies because then I had to tell him that I fucked the dog. What?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Fuck.
So when the father came to the island to see why they were needing so much food, and he found the puppies, he was concerned and unhappy.
as one would be.
Exactly. Flash forward, when the dog meets up with the father again for food, rather than giving him food, he packs his, because the dog would pack like a, basically it was like a pack mule type of situation where he would put mm-hmm. the food into these pockets on the dog, right?
Okay.
So rather than putting food in the pockets, the dad put rocks in the pockets of the dog. And so
and
when
then
dog
threw him in the water.
Well, when the dog went to walk across the ice in the water, it was too heavy and it broke. The dog fell through and drowned and died.
So this was like an ice island. This wasn't like a...
Yes.
Oh.
So this they went.
Just a not fun story all around then.
It's weird and sad. Like, just odd. Like I said, it's not necessarily spooky, but it's just weird. So this left the puppies to fend for themselves and for their mother, right? For whatever reason, in the lore, it says that these puppies turned into three different things. Three turned into irate. I'm just going to say it because mm-hmm. it's plural. Three turned into just normal Inuit people. And then three turned into white people and were sent away to get bigger ships so that they could get more food. I don't know. So,
I mean, no disrespect to your to the legend. Right, it's but just, this is...
It feels like a fever dream. It feels like yeah. a dream I would have. And it's like, I don't really know what happened, but somehow they turned into these three different things. Because that's what happens in my dreams. So these irate can become invisible, and only shamans can see them in this lore.
Okay.
In this story. There is also a legend that sometimes human spirits can become irate. So there's just kind of, it's just a known entity, and every Inuit like village has their own little lore to it.
Mm-hmm.
The irate take children. This is one of their things they do. Hide them in the wilderness and leave them there for dead. They will also confuse hunters and travelers so that they get lost. And the thought is that they do this to keep them out of their like plane where they're like between life and death.
Oh, they're like so, too close to crossing yes. over into the portal or something.
Exactly. There are ancient tales passed down saying that when the creature would come, the people would throw seal skins up in the air to scare them away because they would believe they were throwing boulders at them, because from far away it looked like they were just gray masses. Okay. And this made the irate think that the humans were super strong, and they were like, no, not fucking with you, see you later. And then they leave. Many sightings, that's there what it go. Would be. I was like, why does it say sitting? Autocorrect. Love it. Many sightings happen in Canada where caribou hunting happens, like in big caribou hunting areas. Weird.
Okay.
Considering they're caribou and humans.
Yeah.
And it's called Freeman's Cove.
Okay.
Elders tend to avoid anyone from Freeman's Cove, thinking that they could be an irate. So or like in Iraq, excuse me.
So if you live there, people are like,
shun you.
Ew.
Yeah, I don't like that either. One story is that there was a couple hunting. They both were skilled navigators, and when they were out hunting, they suddenly got like disoriented and couldn't find their way back to their camp, even though it was like clearly in sight. They ended up having to just follow the trail ahead of them. Like, they couldn't see past
mm-hmm.
where the trail was.
That also creeps me out, is stories of, like, where they get disoriented, and then it's, mm-hmm. like, they were, like, a mile from camp, or, like, 500 right. feet from their camp and couldn't find it. Like, and why couldn't you find it?
Not. Yeah. Well, and that's, like...
What was preventing you?
Missing 411 cases freak me out because of stuff like that, where it's like they were there, turned a corner, and they were gone. I don't know what happened.
Right.
So once they returned to their camp, though, where their kids were, okay, there was a polar bear circling the camp. So he was looking for finding some sort of food. They felt that this was an Iraq.
That it was a polar bear?
Yeah, because it's a shapeshifter, remember?
Oh.
Its main shape is that caribou person, but any shape it takes, it has red eyes. So they thought that this was an Iraq because of how confused they got and how hard it was for them to find their way back to the camp. And then there was this wild animal there.
Was it a real polar bear? Did it eat them?
No.
Oh, okay.
But kids are told that the irate will... irate to keep them out of danger, obviously. Like we said, it was kind of a tale of don't go into the wilderness, kids, because you could get confused.
Boogeyman kind of thing.
Exactly. Well, and that's kind of how I found this, because I looked up different worldwide boogeymen. Mm. And that's kind of what they
labeled boogeymen from different cultures.
Exactly. There are a few Inuit lore creatures that I'd like to read more about, because after reading this, then I was like, ooh, what's this guy? Ooh, what's this guy? Like the... Hold on to your tights, because I'm going to try my best. Qualupiut. It's like Qualupillut. There's so many letters. Qualupiut.
Okay.
But it's a green-skinned, long-nailed, human-like creature who lives in the Arctic Ocean, smells like sulfur, grabs kids from the shore, and takes them, like, down under the water, and either they say eats them or keeps them, and it seems to be kids that are, like, naughty.
So they like weren't mermaids. Listening.
I know.
Or sirens.
So it's weird. So they take naughty kids, and then there's like the Tarasuk, which is shadow people in Inuit lore.
Yeah, I know about them. That's creepy.
That freaks me out. Shadow mm-hmm. people just in general. So
I don't like it. One of
those things I find very interesting. The weirdest part about the, Tarasuk though, is that it's not necessarily a shadow being. It's all you can see is their shadow. So it's like, it's emanating a shadow. Not a shadow being.
Mm-mm.
Does that make sense?
No, I don't like it. Stop it.
So that is the story of the Iraq and the lore behind it. I'm sure there's more, but man, I was like, it kind of freaks me out. I don't like it because I don't like humanoid things.
I don't like anything humanoid. It creeps me out. Like even when you're at the zoo and you see the monkeys like standing up and walking or doing like human-like things, I'm like, stop it.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen that TikTok with that dog that walks on two legs because it only has three legs?
Yes. Have you?
They're like, I kicked that Annabelle dog. Oh, it's got three legs.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I love that. I would kick that Annabelle doll so hard. Oh, it's only got three legs.
Oh, sorry, little buddy. Well, a spooky season episode in the books.
Number thrice. Mm-hmm. Good. That's what I went with. Number thrice.
How's your noodle, kid?
It hurts.
I'm sorry.
It hurts real bad.
All right, guys. Well,
power through, man.
Yeah, spread the word.
Spread yourself all over town.
Oh.
All over town.
You.
A whore.
You. Okay, bye.
Bye.